We're talking.
It doesn't matter. There's loads.
Once I'm talking to you, it's about it. Well, you gave us the opportunity to play some records we wanted to hear, and that was the start of it. The way I see it, the start of my interest in music. That's why I played it. If I was arrogant son of a gun, I'd say that the two greatest rock and roll bands in the world back to back. But I wouldn't. I'm not into that at all. Yeah.
Well, like having met and been now being pretty friendly with people like, say, John Entwistle and Pete Townsend, do you see something in the backbeat type of sound from The Who, say, as the same as sort of the two on your right there might play? I mean, not The Edge, but Larry and Adam.
Backbeat. What's backbeat?
I mean, the sort of like what you were talking about on Record Cabinet last week, even. I mean, the sort of.
Where are
you?
Was
I?
Was he talking on Record
Cabinet? Probably one of those words I learned that, you know. I just heard people use, and I think I was just practicing saying it.
It's like the way Edge uses Triumph Herald. He uses backbeat. They're just topics of conversation, Dave.
Fair enough. Actually, I haven't even welcomed you to the programme. Larry, The Edge, Bono and Adam, you're very welcome to the programme.
So
and welcome back home as well.
Thank you.
I don't really know where to start, but I think we start with the album War, because the last time you were with us was the time of the Irish tour, and you came in on one of the nights just around the Dublin concert time, and that was Christmas Direction, before New Year's Day had been released, before it went in so well in Britain, the album War, and before America and all the rest of it. So obviously enough, number three album War is not the same as the other two by in October. It's not sort of naive, it's not optimistic really, it's a little bit bleaker, it's more realistic. Now you two have grown up and you've been allowed to grow up. Yeah. Now in some ways on this level, how about for instance that it might have been a bit of a gamble. The whole thing about War might have been a gamble, and you were lucky in some ways, and you've grabbed at it, and you've done very well with it.
It was very much a gamble in that we consciously tried to break some of the kind of preconceived ideas about what this album would be like. We decided that it wasn't going to sound like I Will Follow Part 2 or Gloria Part 2. We wanted to step sideways, to broaden our horizons, so it obviously was, on that level, it was risky. But I think, to be fair, that is part of the attraction of the band, is that we're always willing to push things around. We're not willing to sit back and let, you know, sit on our laurels and let what we've done in the past keep us going.
But we haven't got any laurels.
So, I mean, War was really just part of what we wanted to do at the time. The fact that it was our most successful record to date, I think, is a mixture of, I don't know, luck and just having a great album.
Well, what about you then, in particular, Edge, with this LP? Because there weren't the same sort of solos as were on previous LPs. It was different. The guitar that you played in this LP was quite different. I mean, even as a vocalist on this LP, or as a vocalist on this tour, I mean, how have you seen your development, say, in relation to War, compared to the previous two albums and tours?
Well, he's married.
But I wasn't then, Adam.
Yeah.
Or was I? No, I wasn't. I think you do change your opinion of what a guitar should sound like and what you want it to sound like, and certainly since we recorded Boy in October, my own taste in guitar playing has changed. I think it's always going to change, or it will get very boring. So on the War album, I think guitar solos had lost their magic for the time being. I mean, New Year's Day was the only one really.
Mm.
But I think I enjoy that one. I think it's fine. It's quite brief and it's got a lot in it. But I think, you know, if people get into a rut musically in terms of sound, in terms of style, I think it becomes a bit tedious. You know, you think of bands like the Stones. Really, they've been doing the same thing for 20 years. It's great and they become an institution. But I think, like the Beatles, there was an attitude. They really did change a lot as they progressed up the ladder. They didn't continue to do the same little 3-minute pop songs for their career. Mm. And I prefer to go in that sort of way.
Well, if you're talking then about experimenting and doing different things with the guitar, I mean, say taking it in sort of the direction of sort of tonality and harmonics and checking out things like that instead of just straightforward solos. I mean, if, for instance, you had King Soniade's album there, now would you listen to the way he uses guitar, or at least some of the people in that band use guitar in relation to, say, African rhythms and that?
Very much so. I like the clean sounds that they use. Not just the guitar, though. I tend to let other instruments influence me as well. I mean, I try and play a lot of instruments, and not very well, but I don't limit myself to guitar. So it's the whole sort of feel of the African sound. There's a lot of other things I'm interested in. I'm listening to things like Ry Cooder, which I used to hate. I really did. I hated that guy. I really hated that album, that really good album he had, which everybody liked. I thought it was terrible.
Played a lot.
That's the one. Was that, what is it? Something Little Sister. I mean, I hated that, but almost as much as the first psychedelic phrase on, but that's a different story. Anyway, but it's funny how your taste changes. I'm now looking at what he does in a totally different way.
Is there hope for the psychedelic phrase?
Who knows, when I'm 50, maybe even that first album. Anyway, what he was doing with traditional sounds and what have you was really, I think, is going to be very big now. It's just feels right for me. So I'm bringing what I did on the album War to its ultimate conclusion at the moment. I'm trying really, really clean sounds, see what happens there. And I think it should be interesting. Who knows?
What's he laughing at?
I just think Bono hasn't got a chance to get a word in it.
Okay, well, hold on a second. Let me throw this one across. What about...
I don't think Bono should say anything to me, really.
He's saving his voice.
For years, I've waited for somebody to ask Edge such an eloquent question as was asked there. And the way he answered, I'm spellbound. I wouldn't try to shut up there. I'm listening as well.
Okay, well, here's a question. Was there a chance, I mean, did you take a big chance, do you think, with the LP War, in that if it hadn't been as it was, the people might have taken you for granted? I mean, let's put it this way. Album number three from a lot of bands who are successful rock-wise would be expected to be a sort of a mellow-out album. People sort of mellow out when they get to 3, 4, and 5 album, whereas you did the exact opposite. Now, how conscious a decision was that?
We made a very conscious decision not to mellow out our sound. You know, first album starts off with a bang, second album a bit less of a bang, and by the third album it's armchair theatre. We said, right, this is a... We didn't say this is a punk rock group, but we said this is an aggressive rock and roll group. We're sick and tired of all the sideshows with regards to this group. People talk about everything but the music and see us in a sort of social context. And I'd like them to just listen to the music for a while, because that's, after all, why we're here. It's why we're in talking to you, because, as I said before, we're as interested in you, in the music. And we wanted to make that clear on the LP. We wanted to make a loud LP, not tonally, every way, in its stance, everything. And that's what it is. That's what it turned out. You also want a contrast. I think those aspects of the cinema sound, which was associated with the first two records, are still present, as in New Year's Day, as in Surrender. But a song like a song speaks for me.
Well, do you look upon it then, War, for instance, in relation to the other two albums, and sort of this was the time now that you had sort of grown up and you could make comments on, say, what was around you as opposed to what you did with the first two albums?
I don't think you ever say to yourself, well, I've grown up. I don't think a day dawns and you just go, well, I'm grown up today, I better stop writing about myself and start writing about the atom bomb and how much a bad thing it is. It's a gradual development. I don't know when it happens. The first two records are very inward, and War is outward. I'd just like to say, actually, just totally off the point, that I'm, and we are delighted to come in here to this program of yours that we love so much and had taped and sent to America, which you probably don't realise, and actually talk about the music and not talk about the rest. And I keep saying the word bullshit in interviews. Every interview I read is bullshit. I'm not going to say it.
Don't say tonight, whatever you do.
But apart from the rest of the bullshit, I'd really, you know, it is great to talk about the music. So thank you to that.
Well, still on the music then. One thing, well, it's sort of on the music, I should say, really. The US tour was sort of booked quite late. Now, if the album hadn't been received as well as it was by critics and the public alike, do you think it could have been a bit of a mistake in terms of the venues, say, you had taken?
No, I think we did precisely the right thing, because the last thing you want to do is end up in a sort of large venue which is only 3/4 full or half full. I don't think anyone would disagree about that.
Our policy was always, let's play a village hall and sell it out, rather than play Carnegie Hall and do half business. And that's precisely why we're playing the Phoenix Park, not, you know, an open plain on the Curragh. Now, if we're going to pick race courses, we want race courses that can be sold out, that can be full, and it is going to be full.
Well, before Sunday, back to the music.
Sorry.
The War LP. The US critics that saw this album as a great socio-political record. Now, what do you think about rock as a social force? If, for instance, the obvious time, say, was around the, I don't know, the Sorbonne, 68, all the stuff, 67 to 70 in America, all the political this, that, and the other. Now, there wasn't exactly, it wasn't the number one type thing throughout the 70s. So do you see it now as a resurgence of that, maybe, and that you two are on the crest of that one?
Well, you speak out as you feel. That's all. That is the key. You know, when I was a kid and I was listening to a teacher talk about W.B. Yeats as a poet, and she was saying that, you know, there was a period that he went through which he was dry. He'd nothing to say. And I remember thinking even then, well, if he'd nothing to say, why didn't he say that? Why didn't he just say, I'm empty? And that's the key to any form of communication, the truth. And if, you know, if I had sat down on the first LP and tried to write a song like Sunday Bloody Sunday, I couldn't have, because I wasn't even aware. I mean, I'm ashamed to say it, but I wasn't even aware of a border. I wasn't even aware of probably of anybody else's existence, let alone anyone else in the country. I'm totally not wrapped up in myself, but as you are. And a lot of people sit down with their pens and papers and they go, oh, no, I better write a song. What will I write a song about? I'll write a song about pollution. That's a social issue. And really, in their heart of hearts, they don't care about, you know, how dirty Dublin is.
Yeah,
in fact, I'm delighted
to come home. You've got to remember
Dublin.
Where the original movement came from. It wasn't something that emerged suddenly. It was something that occurred to people like John Lennon, you know, who had really come to the pinnacle of commercial success and suddenly realised that, you know, he couldn't, in a sense, go home at night, go to bed and feel really great that he'd, you know, done a good day's work and it had all been worthwhile. He sought something ultimately more worthwhile than just writing pop music. So I think what happened then, you got the situation where it became the thing to do. If you are in a band, you must make social comments, you must do this.
And that's rubbish.
Yeah, therefore
I prefer to hear Bebopaluba than some guy getting up and giving his essay, you know, and using the stage as a soapbox or Tutti Frutti or whatever. But if you can tell, the singer who's selling you a line. Really, you can. I think I can. I'm sure you can.
Well, John Lennon is one who hasn't done that, but like, at the same time, one song, for instance, like Give Peace a Chance, I mean, on some levels, that's sloganeering. It's very different than what you two do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, but if I'm going to pick a slogan, I'll pick Give Peace a Chance. And that's the difference between Paul McCartney and John Lennon. Much as I like Paul McCartney, much as I just come back from Scotland, I have to say that John Lennon, for me, was everything I wanted from the Beatles. Because he was prepared to make mistakes, he was prepared to fall flat on his face. He was prepared to sit in a bean bag, and or whatever, you know, do all those sit-ins for peace. He was prepared to just get up off his bean bag and do something. I'll have to shut up. Play
okay,
your song.
Well, no, hold on a second. Before I play a song, I want to see if we're going to earn any money tonight. Do we have any ads? Yeah, we do. Right, let's take a few ads and earn a bit of money. Right then, it's 7:45, Dave Fanning live on Radio 2 talking to you two. Now then, we had a few numbers there. That was the Frenchman in New York, Francois Kevorkian, is that right?
That's the man himself.
That's the man himself. He did that one there. And also, before that, we had Jaff and me from King Sonny Ade's album, and it's Juju Music.
King Sonny Ade. Punk It Up as well from Malcolm
McLaren. And we had Punk It Up from Malcolm McLaren. Right then, that's the African bit out of the way. let's see now. Talking about the album War, which we still were, at least which we were earlier, I never saw this as a headline over a review of the album War, but I'm sure it was in the small print in some ways. And what would you say to this, which is basically an accusation, I suppose? You two point the finger. I mean, like, the old soapbox thing. I mean, like, thumping your self-righteousness from the soapbox of the stage as well, taking it out. I mean, would you be... That's not what you two were doing with War.
To an extent, but it was pointing the finger at ourselves. I think that was the crucial... Yeah, element of it.
Some singers will take a stance. You've heard them all the time. You better do this, or you better do that. You've destroyed planet Earth. You know, all these yous. And I've never, I've never, you know, never pointed the finger in that respect. Our music is always we. Look what we've done. Anyway, you're only talking about one song. You don't need to, I mean, Sunday Bloody Sunday is the only song that's in any way, accused of being politicising, and it's not. Even it's not. What about Surrender? What about, what are the other songs on the album?
Drowning Man.
What about Drowning Man? What about, because we were talking not about war between nations or within nations on that LP, we're talking about struggle, full stop. Yeah. Conflict within anybody, conflict within yourself, within the city. Surrender, Two Hearts Beat as One, Red Light, those three songs are inspired from New York. They have not an R&B feel, but they are rhythmic and they're soulful. But people don't talk about that. You see, people have got to make good copy. And even if somebody says to me, I said this before, I have to say it again because it's the truth. Bono, so, you know, what do you think about Northern Ireland? What do you think about the Troubles? I say, I don't want to talk about the Troubles, you know, to you. I don't want to. And then that will be the headline of the article. Bono refuses to talk about Troubles. That'll be the headline. They won't talk about the music. People refuse to talk about the music. Hope well enough.
Did you shy away from putting in that line which you originally had in the song, don't talk to me about the rights of the IRA, or did you think it just didn't fit in the end?
It's actually, we were people who had been to the US, had faced Irish America, and came back with our tail between our legs, you know, because it's a bit different over there. They don't really understand. Mm-hmm. They see things in black and white, whereas a lot of things are in grey. And I'm opposed to any violence, and I felt that if I put a line, blah, 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 IRA, I'd have to put in a line, blah, 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 UVF, or British Army, or whatever. And I said, I'm not getting into this. I have to write this as it's coming out.
Yeah.
And that's the way it arrived on the LP. There is no censorship on a U2 record, really. I mean, I think that's obvious, because we dig our own graves. Mm. I mean, there are words on that LP that I don't even remember singing. Honestly don't remember it. And they're mixing it, and I come into In Mullane Studios, and I walk into the room and Lily White's at the desk, and he'll turn up and there'll be this line, and I say, I didn't say what? And he said, yeah, I like it. And I say, I don't really like it. And he'll say, I think you will. He say, you said it, stick by it. And I'll go, but I did say it. And the things come out of me on the microphone that I often don't even know are there. And there is no censorship. Mm.
Well, is there something significant about the white flag on stage? I mean, is there something special about that in the song, Sunday,
yes,
Bloody Sunday?
The white flag, for me, is the only flag, ultimately. And we are an Irish group. I'm an Irishman, and I'm so glad that we're back from America. Really, that's not a line, that's the truth. And at the same, you know, and I love to be in Ireland, but I'm not, it just frightens me, all this talk about, you know, territory. Mm. You know, be it the Stars and Stripes, the Green, White and Irons, the Union Jack, and the white flag, what the Sting said, one world is enough for all of us. I agree with him. And that's why we have the white flag on stage.
Well then, getting away from Sunday Bloody Sunday, but staying with the lyrics, Bono, with the album War, did you feel there was something particular about that, in that, for instance, the previous album, October, you had a lot of the lyrics written out for that, and two bright-eyed girls stole them from you in Portland, Oregon or something, and then you had to do a lot of them sort of almost improvise in the studio. Now, with War, let's put it this way, for instance, do you come across a failure to articulate a lot of what you want to say? I mean, the song Gloria will tell us that, but do you find that?
Yeah, I think Van Morrison obviously finds it as well, which was encouraging when I heard that LP, Inarticulate Speech of the Heart. It spoke a lot for the way I felt as well. Improvisation hasn't been a new thing, by the way, with you two. I mean, we were making up the words of our songs as we went along in the Dandelion Market for Boy. But, you know, you're right. War was the lyrics were more specific. Because I'd love to splash words onto the canvas for the first two. I'll bumping the words off each other just because they're emotional, and that's the sort of poetry that I liked. And I'm not into poetry, by the way, in inverted commas. I mean writing that I liked. And people were saying, well, really, you know, what's this guy trying to say, really? You know, I want to be able to put on a U2 record, and I wanted to be able to explain itself from the word go. Now, I can't explain half the lyrics, so how can, you know, how can I expect people to understand them first go? They took a time to come out of me. I expect they'll take a time to sink into people. But on War, I said, no, I'm going to sharpen these words. I'm going to start making statements like broken bottles under children's feet, bodies strewn across a dead-end street, but I won't heed the battle call. What's my backup against the wall? You know,
in other words, it's what you said on those six dates that I saw around Christmas. This is not a rebel song. That's really it.
Yeah, but it speaks for itself. It really does, and they are clear words. You can't.
Okay, but if War is an album of hope, say, do you not think just that one word, War, might have got a lot of flack? I mean, did you think that it might have turned people off calling the album War?
Was it a danger? I hoped it had turned people off.
I think. And in this age of escapism, it was a defiant word of realism. We were just actually telling it how it was, but without trying to commit suicide in the effort. You know, there is an optimism to the band which is born from possibly naivety, but other areas. But we've never been guilty of getting off the point or getting into cuckoo land. It's always been ourselves, you know, in the world, and it's always been pointed in a very different direction.
Well, if love is the main theme in most pop and rock songs, and if, for instance, current pop music is sort of love with escapism, would you see War and U2 at the moment as sort of, if you want to say love is the message as a basic, like, bottom line, then it's love with realism?
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. Mm. I mean, that's what you're listening to mostly when you turn on the radio, excuse me, OTE, but you listen to sort of escapist music, Baby, I Love You, and I like to escape myself, you know, I like pop music, I like Motown, I like love songs, I should say that, but there comes a time where music has the ability to be more than just pop music. Mm. It has the ability to speak for a generation that is virtually going down the plug hole. If you want to start talking plug hole here, you know, I mean, there is a case to be made. If the people who are in front of the microphone aren't going to speak out, who is? How am I supposed to talk about unemployment? I've no right to talk about unemployment. I'm not unemployed. I am employed, just about. After this interview, they'd probably sack me. But, you know, at the same time, I feel, I don't, when I walk down a street, I don't walk down with my eyes closed. I haven't got a blindfold on. I see things. I see the contradictions of the troubles. That's why I contrasted Easter Sunday with Sunday Bloody Sunday. And that was the bit that I think made people sit uncomfortably in their seat. And I hope they did.
Well then, War, an album of hope, sort of an emotional sort of LP, it's not a political LP. Like, for instance, you can catalogue your own experiences now in that, right? Okay, fair enough. Now, do you meet people and they talk about the LP and they talk about certain tracks and they get the same feeling that you might have got when you were writing it or when you were recording it in the studio? And if that does happen, does it amaze you that it does?
It does.
You're talking about empathy.
Yeah, empathy, exactly.
Yeah, that's what music is for me. It's that quality where the performer and you actually, you know, it's a communication, and that's what all the best rock and roll music really was derived from. Soul music, gospel music, it's all music that has borne grief. It's got that same sort of emotional
quality. It's music
quality
that communicates. Veg has said it. Now, what I would like to sort of attack are our contemporaries who, because of their fear in saying anything, they say nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how many records do you play on your program that you're even aware of what's going on in the singer's mouth, or to think about his brain's another matter, but to even be aware of what's going on in his heart? You're into the sound, you're into the groove, and I like that, but I want more.
Well, then I assume that interviews then are as important to you as a lot of other things about you too.
I mean, because I find out more about myself in interviews than I do. I mean, I run away from myself all the time, so when you start asking me questions, I have to think about it. And to answer your question, and I never answer questions, it's a terrible thing. Yes, we do get a lot of people. We've seen the success of our music. In that respect, has inspired other people to form groups. I think maybe, you know, if Big Country come in on Sunday, you could talk to them about some of the reasons they formed Big Country. There are people around. You said Two Hearts Beat is One. I like that. That's what the song's about. The song's more than just a love song. It's it's any two things coming together.
Well, you said there you couldn't obviously talk directly about unemployment because you're not unemployed, but presumably you're not cynical or pessimistic. But do you fear for the future, I mean, in terms of, say, society,
I'm
kids?
I'm frightened.
Like, having listened to war, that's a straightforward, honest question.
Yeah, I am scared silly, but not scared silly in a sort of doomsday way. I want to be scared. I went to see a movie last night called Atomic Cafe.
Mm.
I mean, I suggest if anybody wants to, you know, to be scared silly, that's where to go to. I want to be scared silly. I don't want to be just complacent. I don't want to just sort of adopt a laissez-faire attitude. It'll be all right in the morning. You know, and you know, to be fair, it's an Irish attitude. Ah, sure, you know yourself. You know, there's no, don't rock the boat. Don't be worrying yourself. But you've got to be. You've got to think about what is happening at the moment.
The movie Atomic Cafe, then, I mean, like, totally real and yet black humour in its own way now. Mm. Certainly in the 80s, it just looks ridiculous. It's really funny in that mm-hmm. respect. But what about a song like Seconds?
That's exactly the same. People didn't understand that in Seconds there was a degree of black humour. We put a lot of clichés together surrounding the atomic bomb issue, if you like. Something we're very concerned with, but we didn't want to be po-faced about it.
Mm.
And, you know, lightning flashes across the sky, east to west, do or die, all these things, you know, it takes a second to say goodbye, push the button, pull the plug. And what we found hilarious were the amount of journalists that went, they're very serious, how about this, push the button, pull the plug. And, you know, we just push the air button and pull the air plug out.
Okay, well, listen, getting away from that one then for a second. No matter how much sort of growing up you do in your teens, and there's still plenty more to be done a little bit later on as well, there's plenty of growing up to be done well up to the age of, say, 25 or whatever. Now, do you feel in some ways you might be out of step with your own generation, that it could happen that way because of success so early of you two and etc.? I mean, Adam has said before that now at 23 he feels a hell of a lot better than he ever did, say, at 19, 20 or 21.
Out of step with our generation?
Yeah.
I think we're just starting to actually to get in sync, I mean, in some ways, because, I mean, we're aware